John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show, Hotel Mars, Episode M. David Livingston, Dr. Space of the Space Show, is here with me as my co-pilot as we very much welcome Alan Stern. Alan Stern of New Horizons, the author with our colleague David Grinspoon of Chasing New Horizons, Inside the Epic First Mission to Pluto. You will all recall the Summer 15 flyby of Pluto gave us information of the, what Alan calls, science fiction planet that we're still absorbing. It's overwhelming, the data that's come in from Pluto and its binary system with Charon, its moon. However, there's another day. There's another mission for New Horizons, and we're here to address that with Alan. Alan, congratulations on the ongoing fascination with Pluto. But we have in front of us another mystery, Ultima Thule. Your New Horizons, passing by Pluto, is now headed for its target, which is a flyby on the 1st of January, 2019. That target is not entirely understood, and you've been studying it for some time. So we begin with a checkup on New Horizons. How is the robot doing? Is it on course? Is all satisfactory to you? Good evening to you, Alan.
Hi. It's great to be back. And yes, New Horizons is performing spectacularly. It is on course. In fact, just last week, we had a course correction maneuver just to tweak up the arrival timing at Ultima Thule. But all the spacecraft systems are doing well. All of the scientific instruments are ready for the flyby. As I said, we're on course and homing in, and really it couldn't be going any better.
Yes, you gave the metaphor of right down the center of the road, right down the highway. So even though the adjustment was small, it is now successful. So, David?
Hi, Alan. What now is the time it takes a signal to reach New Horizon?
You know, we're very far from the Earth and from the Sun, and the signals, the radio signals travel at the speed of light, which is just an unbelievable, blinding 186,000 miles per second. That means that you could reach out to the moon and back in about 3 seconds, but it takes 6 hours, 6 hours and a few minutes each way up to the spacecraft and another 6 hours and a few minutes back for signals from the Earth or the spacecraft to make that crossing. It is an unimaginable distance, almost 4 billion miles.
The success of your mission depends upon your understanding your target. This is in the Kuiper Belt. What do we know about the Kuiper Belt beyond Pluto? And what are the risks of flying through the Kuiper Belt, Alan?
Well, that's a great pair of questions. The Kuiper Belt was postulated back in the mid-20th century, most famously by a planetary astronomer, Gerard Kuiper, who it's been named after, and it was discovered in the early 1990s. It's two things. First, it is the context for Pluto. Pluto, it turns out, is not alone out there beyond Neptune. It orbits with a disk of material of comets, and somewhat larger objects, which are just a teeming population left over from the formation of the solar system, and a handful of other small planets like Pluto. And because the Kuiper Belt is so far from the Sun, the temperatures are very low, almost absolute zero. So this combination of great distance from the Sun and cold temperature make it a perfect preservation zone for these objects that are out there. They are, we believe, essentially unchanged over all these billions of years. And so our ability to fly New Horizons across the Kuiper Belt and observe Ultima Thule up close and other Kuiper Belt objects in the distance is somewhat similar to making an archaeological dig into the history of our solar system and how the planets were formed. It's very high priority scientifically. The National Academy of Sciences ranked it as the highest priority at the time that New Horizons was getting started. And now we're at the second stage of culmination of achieving that National Academy goal. We've explored the Pluto system, as you said, in 2015. And now, at New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, turning 2019, we will make the first ever close-up flyby of a Kuiper Belt object. and we're going to revolutionize our knowledge, what we know about it.
What is the
about the dangers?
Yes, the risk out there. Is it crowded?
It is not crowded. The Kuiper Belt is vast. In fact, the surface area of the Kuiper Belt is larger by a factor of several than all the space from the sun out to the planet Neptune. And so even though the Kuiper Belt is teeming with small bodies and with small planets, they are individually separated by great distances. And so there is no significant risk to the spacecraft in crossing the Kuiper Belt, which it will be doing all the way out into the end of the 2020s, as a matter of fact, because the Kuiper Belt goes twice as far out as we are now, almost. But there may be dangers at the flyby, because if Ultima Thule has large numbers of moons or rings or other dust structures, we don't want to fly through those because our speed is so great. We're traveling 32,000 miles per hour. That's almost 10 miles per second. And striking anything, even the size of a rice pellet, could shred the spacecraft. So as we approach Ultima, we are using the onboard cameras and radioing pictures back to look for moons, rings, other hazards. If we find them in our path, we'll fire the engines and divert to a safer close approach distance in order to make sure that everything goes well.
David?
You're flying by at this huge speed. How long do you stay getting pictures of Ultima Thule? Is it so quick that you don't spend much time getting pictures, or how is that determined?
Well, that's a great question. Now, you probably remember as we were on approach to Pluto that we started getting pictures that were better than what the Hubble Space Telescope could deliver a couple of months out. That's because Pluto is the size of a continent, like the size of the United States. But Ultima is very much smaller. It's about the size of Chesapeake Bay on the eastern seaboard. And so although our cameras can currently see it, it's just a dot in the distance. We're still 70 million miles away, and we're closing at almost a million miles a day. But we'll only resolve it and be able to get high-resolution pictures and images and other data types only in the last day before the flyby and the day of the flyby. And we only get one shot at that. If it doesn't go well on those 2 days, we'll come up with half a loaf or no loaf at all. So we're planning very carefully and testing all the flyby plans to make sure that this very high-speed flyby of this small but scientifically valuable target at the frontier of our solar system is successful.
We're looking towards Ultima Thule, but we have some hints about what you're heading towards. And over the last year, I believe this summer and the summer before, teams went to remote places on Earth, Argentina, South Africa, Africa, to view the object using a method called transit, the transit system. How did they do this, Alan, and what did they learn about Ultima Thule using the transit system?
Well, this is a type of transit that's called a stellar occultation, in which we predict mathematically where on the Earth Ultima will make stars wink out as it passes in front of them. And then we position telescopes in the expected shadow path of Ultima. And from timing how long the star winks out, we can determine the size of Ultima Thule. And by doing that at a whole series of places in the shadow, we can map out its silhouette, its shape. And that's important because Ultima is so small and so far away that even the Hubble Space Telescope can't resolve it. It's just a point of light. This is the only technique that allows us to determine the size and shape. And we were successful at that. One of our teams on New Horizons, our ground-based astronomy team led by Dr. Mark Bowie, deployed over 50 astronomers with 24 telescopes to Argentina in the summer of 2017, and then again to Senegal in northern Africa this summer. And in both cases, they were able to get in the shadow path, watch it wink out with one or more telescopes, and as a result, We now have a pretty good bead on the size of this thing. As I said, it's about the size of Chesapeake Bay, maybe 20 miles across. We have a pretty good indication of its reflectivity as a result of this, because we can combine its brightness and its size to calculate how reflective the surface is. And it turns out it's quite dark. It's about as dark as bare ground. And in addition, we mapped out its shape in 2017, and it looks like something called a contact binary. In other words, it looks like two lobes, if you will, or two spheres, rough spheres, that are probably connected together, maybe orbiting one another, but in any case, a very exotic shape, probably telling something to us about how the early stages of planet formation took place.
We're speaking with Alan Stern. Dr. Alan Stern is the guy for New Horizons, which had that great success of the flyby of the planet Pluto, but it's now headed for even more mystery with Ultimate Thule ahead. David Livingston, Dr. Space of The Space Show. Alan is the author with David Grinspoon of Chasing New Horizons, Inside the Epic First Mission to Pluto. When we come back, I'm going to press Alan and David as well on Ultimate Thule. What can achieve with a flyby? What's on board New Horizons that will give us information that we can puzzle about the way we're puzzling about Pluto? I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. Alan Stern is here. He is the author with David Grinspoon of Chasing New Horizons, Inside the Epic First Mission to Pluto, which Alan drove for most of the last decade, all of the last decades of the 20th century into the 21st century, and the great success of the summer of 2015, the flyby of the science fiction planet. But there's a new mission, and the mission is ahead of us, Ultimate Thule, an object that might be, as Alan tells us, a contact binary. What does that mean? Might be a very dark object that dates to the early part or the beginnings of our solar system. In other words, we're seeing the fundamentals of what Earth is made up of or how Earth came to be. Now the puzzle is, what can New Horizons achieve for us? Alan, I go to the instruments that were on board. They were spectacular with Pluto. And we saw that first heart of Pluto, and then you gave us details of the planet, and then the binary emerged. And we're still getting information from those photographs, all downloaded, still being analyzed. What can work comparably on Ultimate Thule, considering that it might be a contact binary, considering it might be dark substance, and considering we're so far away from the Earth that the signal takes so long? So what are you expecting, Alan?
Well, we have a very sophisticated little spacecraft that's going to be visiting Ultimate Thule New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, John. And we have seven scientific instruments on board, really state-of-the-art equipment, more advanced than first flyby instruments ever sent to any of the closer planets. With those seven scientific instruments, we're going to map the surface of Ultima to determine what its geology is all about and how it was formed. We're going to map it in stereo so that we can determine the topography. We're going to map it in color so that we can see if there are variations across the surface that indicate past activity, current activity, or even that it was made of several different things that came together. We're going to map its surface composition with our composition spectrometers. We're going to search for satellites. We're going to search for rings. We're going to search for whether it has an atmosphere. And if it has satellites or rings or an atmosphere, we're going to determine their composition, we hope, and learn about their geology, we hope. So this is a wide-ranging investigation that's bringing amazing scientific firepower to bear. And it sounds like science fiction, you know. We have a robot 4 billion miles away doing a 32,000-mile-per-hour flyby of a 4 billion-year-old relic of planetary formation. But that's what NASA can do, and that's what New Horizons is about to do.
David?
Are you expecting a rocky surface, or do you have any expectations, or it's a blank slate waiting to see what you find?
Well, it's a little bit of both, David. We've never been to anything like this. We've never been to anything so far away. We've never been to anything that's so well preserved. We know very little about it. You know, with Pluto, we knew a fair amount going in. We knew that it had an atmosphere. We knew its basic surface composition. We knew that it had five satellites, and we knew what their orbits were, for example. With Ultima, about all we know is something about the size and shape, and the Hubble Space Telescope measured its color and tells us that it's reddish. And that's about it. So we're going in with eyes wide open. We'll see. Now, to answer your question a little more specifically, we don't expect to find liquids on the surface, for example. Yes, we expect to find a solid surface, but we don't know what kind of landforms will be there. We don't know what kind of details the surface will present us, for example, crevices or faults or craters on the surface that will provide windows into the interior. Did it ever have activity? Did it ever develop its own geology? Or is it simply a relic of ancient planetary formation? Did it ever have an atmosphere? How many moons does it currently have? It might be none, then it might be a whole swarm. So this is pure exploration. And as I said, no one's been to anything like this. We won't know much about it until we get to New Year's Eve. But starting New Year's Eve and then for weeks and, in fact, for months as we download the data, we'll be learning more and more about Ultima and this whole new class of objects out in the Kuiper Belt for the first time and over a period of many months.
Alan, I can't help myself. I have to ask about Pluto because there's so much unknown about Ultima Thule. There was the suggestion that Pluto has underground oceans. This is 2 years old now. Is there an update you can give us? Have you got certainty or uncertainty about the possibility of conditions that would be conducive to life as we know on Pluto?
Well, that's holding up, it turns out. That's one of the most exciting discoveries that New Horizons data can bear on, the possibility that Pluto has a deep underground liquid water ocean. We have circumstantial evidence for it, and that case is not only held up, but it's strengthened over time, and members of our scientific team now have some new results that I can't divulge because they haven't been accepted for publication that really strengthen the story and add details to what the composition of that ocean may be. So in the end, I think we're going to need an orbiter around Pluto in the 2030s, for example, to go back and really probe that ocean and the fascinating geology of Pluto and its moons to make more progress. But New Horizons has really whet our appetites.
Thumbs up to orbiter. Thumbs up to lander. Dr. Alan Stern, the co-author with David Grinspoon, Dr. David Grinspoon of Chasing New Horizons Inside the Epic First Mission to Pluto. With a kicker, here comes Ultima Thule. David Livingston, Dr. Space of the Space Show. This is Hotel Mars, episode end.